Welcome back to the Vidgers Podcast. We are a queer legend, of course, super fan podcast. I am Sam Stanish. We are here today talking about book four, chapter 10, Operation Beifong, the quadrultimate episode of Legend of Korra. Word I just made up. It's good. We're gonna get into it. With me, as always, is I didn't choose him. He chose me. He's my friend Juicy. It's Derek Reining.
I know, never have I been more upset that you can't screenshot Netflix, because the caption Juicy Grunts was like a great way to start out the episode.
Really good drag name.
Juicy Grunts. It's Juicy Moans. It was, yeah, I mean, kind of a horrible episode title for a really fun episode, I would say.
I mean, somewhere in the back of my mind, I must have known that Beifong was one word, but in all of my notes, I've been writing it two words.
I feel like they kind of waffled on that. I mean, not the only retcon that happens in this episode. but I mean, it's just like kind of a corny name that has nothing. Like, there are so many cooler names they could have gone for this episode. And I will not name any because I can't think of any right now, but I'm sure there are cooler options.
Something about the test, I feel like, would have been the weapons testing.
Yeah.
Whatever the name of the pin was that Julie took, they could have just called it that word. And then that could have been a good title.
Or the rescue, or like something, anything. I don't know. But it was a really fun episode. I remember this episode being a lot of fun on the first watch. And it really held up, I think.
I enjoyed myself today. And I'll bravely say that.
Yes, I'm just going to bravely say that anytime Toph Beifong appears and like uses earthbending, even for 5 seconds, I'm a fan of it.
Until she doesn't want to, and then does want to, but then also then decides not to.
We'll get into that. It is a very juicy, in a bad way, ending to a very juicy in a good way episode, I would say.
The spectrum is so wide, from juicy to juicy.
It's like a juicy like Roxy Andrews juicy, or juicy like when you step in a puddle and your sock is juicy.
Ooh, the worst kind of juice. Last week we had ooze. Now we're talking juice.
Foot juice. I mean, feet, as we all know, Beifong feet are a thing. They're powerful stuff.
Yes. Oh, yes. They really are. They were able to see that unseeable prison.
I kind of love that. That's like, it's almost like lazy writing, but that makes total sense within like the hours of the show.
Yes.
Where it's like, oh yeah, like, you know, that like random cavern is under our feet. It's like, oh yeah, well, she would know that exists because that's like her special power.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's not lazy writing. It's just, it just makes complete sense. They're like, they would put them in this weird prison thing, but also it's clear from them just having this experience that they know it's probably there.
Right. I guess lazy, right? Like, maybe a better word would be like almost like Saturday morning cartoon writing, where it's like the heroes just know where to go to like save the day, you know? But in this context, they like know that because they have like superpowers that let them know that.
Yes. there's we'll get it. Okay, we open the episode. They're outside. Zafu, Lin, Bolin, and Opal are there, and then Toph shows up.
Mother, literally mother, but not very motherly. I feel like we need to do a sort of a spectrum of like who's mother, but like also like is not good at being an actual mother to her children,
right? Emma is probably mother on both sides. Like, she is mother, and then she's also, it seems like she's a pretty good mother.
Yes, mother to all, and also mother to her children.
I guess it's quadrant.
But yeah, it would be a quadrant of like mother, 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 bad mother, not mother, good mother, and then not mother and bad mother.
Yes. What is Zuko's mom's name? I don't remember.
Oh, Ursa.
Ursa. You know what? She was not, like, you know, I know Azula's probably a tough child to raise, but she's more in the middle than you would expect. And she's also not that mother. She's kind of true. She might be true neutral.
Mother goes. Because she's like not really there. She was like, yeah, she was a good mother to her son, but a bad mother to her daughter. So that evens out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could see Ursa in the true neutral zone. I feel like not mother, bad mother would be Toph's mom.
Right. Not mother at all and a bad mom.
And a bad mother. I'm like, who? So what's left? We have Toph in the corner.
We need Toph. Someone who is mother, but is a bad mother, and then we need someone who is not mother but is a good mother.
Is a good mother.
Honestly, this is, you know, messed up, but I would say that Katara's mom, or yeah, that's her name.
Yeah,
is a good mother, but is
not mother. Yeah, she doesn't do much. I mean, she does do, but she's like, I don't know. I think that's a very solid pick.
Thank you.
And I feel like, who would be mother but bad mother?
This one's tough.
Maybe Su Yin? I mean, she's not bad.
No, yeah, I think she's a good mom. She's just, you know, she has tough sister and daughteral relationships.
Mother, well, wait, no, we said Toph is mother, bad mother. What's the other one?
Oh, wait.
So,
did we do all of them?
No, because I think we're missing not mother and bad mother. Yeah, so someone who we don't like and is bad. No, I know that was Toph's one. I don't remember. Oh, it would be not mother, good mother. We just did that one.
We needed to be writing this down.
Good mother. No, we didn't do the like the ultimate mother, good mother. No, Pema. So we got them all. Right?
Pema.
Yeah.
Toph's mom.
Because Pema's top right up like
Toph.
Mm-hmm.
And Kaya. Or no, and then
Kaya and Ursa.
And well, Kaya Ursa's and Ursa. Middle. Okay, we did it all.
Yes. Right? You're welcome, everyone.
Good mom, bad mom. Good mom, but not mother. Yeah, okay, we did it all. We did it. We're both like exhausted. We can't even count to five.
I mean, I feel like Boleyn, like I have a headache now from yeah. all that. Yeah, I love that they really leaned into the himbofication of Boleyn in this episode.
Yeah, especially now that he's being forgiven for his fascist leanings and his girlfriend is back with him. He's fully been exonerated and is ready to just be our himbo prince like, once more. And especially like in this first scene, bringing it back to the chronological order, Boleyn like completely stumbles over himself because he's so excited about like seeing Toph. He's like, ah! And then Toph is like, what's wrong with him? And then Lynn is like, he's an actor. which I think is just very funny. Of them, I feel like they haven't mentioned that he's like a movie star in a while, and so it's funny that they're like, he's an actor.
Yes, it was a fun callback and a funny sort of like jab, and like yeah, it's like a funny joke that they have not gone for yet with Boleyn's character. It was perfect, and like honestly, I agree with Opal's decision to bring him back or to take him back. No, but I think we all know like that. Straight couple usually with the most awful man you've ever met in your life and the most gorgeous woman you've ever seen, you know?
Yes, they're all over my Facebook feed.
So it's true to life. They were going for verisimilitude here, as they always do.
Yes. And, okay, then this is where Opal introduces Toph to Juicy, which I don't know that we knew that name before. I was surprised. It just feels like that is a name that I don't know that they've gone that way with a pet, an animal, a name of anything yet so far in the show. I feel like this is the first one that's been like an English word. And for it to be Juicy is just very.
Yeah. And it means what it says. It is just Juicy.
Yeah. It's not like it's like Julie. It's Juicy.
And it's spelled. Like Juicy. Yeah, I don't, are we supposed to assume it's like been like translated to us as the audience or something?
I don't think so, because Momo means something and they didn't translate peach. That
yeah, it means peach, which is so adorable. We haven't seen lemurs in quite a while, I would say.
Yes,
which is tragic.
Concur. I honestly, nowhere to be seen.
Mm-hmm. It's I feel like I remember distinctly when we talked about Avatar proper, every episode we're like, the cute creature of the week is, and I feel like we're very we're lacking in the cute creature department in Korra, unfortunately.
Even the creatures are that are, you know, seemingly should be main characters, we're lacking in seeing them.
I know, it's sad. Maybe they didn't sign their contracts and they're just friends of for the season.
Must be. That would have been if they had had more if they had had a bigger budget, if they had done, instead of the clip show, they did like a mockumentary episode, or like a real documentary of like a mover, but about like Team Avatar.
That would have been great. I feel like they like kind of did that with the Nuk-Tuk stuff, but not really. It was just about the book two happenings, kind of.
Yeah. Regardless,
we want to go back there.
Next scene is everyone else who isn't on the Zaofu Operation Beifong, as the episode determined, is meeting with the president, and they're like, "Look at these flying machines we invented." And the president is like, "We need nukes," and they're like, "Absolutely not." And then he's like, "We do,"
and then Korra's like, "No, we don't need nukes. We need to enlist civilian spirits to fight for us," which is a kind of hilarious solution. I get what she's going for, but I also am like thinking about the spirits we've seen since like she's opened the portal. They're all kind of just like cutesy little creatures. They're not like big monsters like Unalaq was sending out.
Yes, but like the vines were like kidnapping people, so they do have some power. But yeah, all of the creatures and spirits we've seen are like the most, this is where the animal budget has gone.
Yeah,
just designing very, very cute spirits.
I love
every episode a new spirit.
I know. I love the purple one with the two mouths. That was really cute. I'm pretty sure we saw the one that disguised itself as a dog. And it like it's fully disappears too when Korra's like asking for help. I was like, that is shady as hell. You were like her best friend and you're just like, bye. That's fucked up.
Yeah, that was funny. Like, I mean, I think it's a very interesting parallel between Korra and Kuvira, where Korra is like, we need spirits, but I think Korra has more of a point than the spirits are like giving her ground on. Like live in Republic City, so like you would think that they would want to defend it.
Yeah, they're like, actually, I mean, to be fair, it's like, honestly, it would be better for them if like everyone who lived there got like destroyed and they can just like chill in the rubble. I don't know why I said destroyed instead of like killed, like as if I'm being censored by Nickelodeon. Yeah. I can't just say murdered. They're trying to destroy the people.
Destroy our community. And then Wu comes up with the idea to evacuate the civilians of Republic City, and it later is revealed that he is only pretending to care about the people because he wants Korra to date him, and he knows that Korra cares about people, and so Wu is like, I'll do that too.
Which is like funny. I think it would be better if he had been like, no, I just wanted to impress you, Mako, because I know how much you love like saving people or whatever. I think that would be cuter, because like I keep forgetting that he like has a thing for Korra, because like, why?
Yeah, I didn't remember that being a character trait.
He like flirts with her before he gets kidnapped, I think, and that's it. But it's like, it's like there was a funnier joke there than that. Like, that we needed another pass.
I get that they're like preparing, because obviously Kuvira would attack Republic City. Obviously, that's like something she would so do. But this plotline seems premature, since the end of the episode is about how Julie knows that Kuvira is gonna attack Republic City. But then it's like, it's not a surprise, and it doesn't seem that big of a deal because they're already preparing for it.
It's like, as soon as you know they're making a canon, it's like, where else would they point it?
And it's kind of like the seismic site thing, where they automatically know where the prisoners are, because they're like, it's funny writing because the characters are like, well, this is the most logical thing, but it doesn't, it's just not something that I see a lot, I feel like, in TV, where the characters have a problem and then are, because of who they are and their abilities and their logical minds, they instantly know what they should be doing next.
Maybe you've been watching too much Buffy.
Maybe.
That's the show where no one ever tries to find the logical conclusion until the final, like, 10 minutes of the show.
Yeah, there's just no research stage for either of these issues. They just, like, instantly put their plan into action, which is funny.
Yeah, they're just, like, smart like that. I think that's totally fine.
Oh, yeah, I think it's fine. It's just, that's just interesting to think about, I guess.
Intriguing.
Very interesting stuff the writers had going on.
Yes. Did Asami even get to talk? She said, like, one thing, I think.
She's like, these are the hummingbirds.
Yeah, I thought of it while watching a hummingbird. She's like, okay. I'm like, we couldn't get a scene of that?
No. We could never have Asami be having a plot line ever.
Like, yeah, whatever. It's fine. They look fierce in the sketch. So
They do.
I'm excited to see them make it work.
A far cry from Sokka's drawings.
Yes. Well, speaking of artists, I'm glad we got a little bit of... I love that the artistic child, I forget his name. They said his name and I forget it. Just like, he can metal bend for sure. They showed him metal bending in the scene. And he's just like, still just like, doesn't fight. I think that was really funny.
And according to this episode, everyone can metal bend.
Like all of them?
Well, Toph said that everyone can learn how to metal bend if they're taught correctly.
Yeah, I feel like she was just kind of like taking a jab at Bolin. Maybe like during their travel, like their little mission, he mentioned he can't metal bend. And so she was like, I'm going to just like rub salt in the wound. And they clapped back with the lava bending.
Yeah, and she was like, hey, maybe you are cool.
Yeah, it was cute that they were doing sort of a meta thing there with Bolin being like a fanboy of Toph. Because it's like, it is rough to see her just be like we said, mother, but bad mother. And like her children are, I mean, one of her children like likes her. But it's like, it's good to see someone, it's good to see someone in the show recognize how we feel about her.
Yes. And because Opal is like, Opal likes her too, but it's not the same when it's her grandmother.
Yes.
Maybe just so... like someone who's obsessed with the legend of Toph more so than the personal relationship.
Right. Yes. Opal didn't do much airbending this episode, did she?
She had the hookup. She was the wheels.
Yes, that's true. Which is cute. She had Juicy. Yes. Lest we forget. yes.
My Air Bison is named Pussy Wagon.
What's his little deal?
He only has arrows right over his butt.
Oh, I was going to say he's like real, like cats are always just like clawing, like climbing on him and he wagons them around.
Where is he wiggling with all that wagon? Into the sky.
Just a fat-assed bison who loves cats.
It sounds cute to me.
I mean, that could have been Juicy. Juicy also could mean a juicy ass. So, like, they could have just given him a rotund butt.
That would have been cute.
He just like pivots. They're like, "Oh, your bison is like normal," and then it turns around and it's like, "Oh my god, its ass is huge,
and it can fit more people on it." Yeah, it has like a specialty made like whatever harness.
Yes, a double harness.
we get our first hint that like something's wrong with the machine. The laser is going wrong. Someone has perhaps done some subterfuge.
And I feel like it's like pretty, maybe it's just because I've seen it before, but it's like, okay, so Julie is like sabotage. She's the inner saboteur.
Yes. And it kind of seems like it could only be her. And then we get confirmation that Julie's lying later. And then we get confirmation that it was her.
Yeah. Which, I mean, Julie is so smart. Why did she leave the dang doodad in her like her blouse. Like, chuck that thing across the field. No one's gonna notice it.
Yeah.
It's just like, Diva, like, you are, like, everyone's talking her up as they should, but then it's like you had the doohickey right there. I don't know. And it was a huge thing. When they called it a pin, I was thinking right. Like a little thing.
I am glad she's not evil.
Me too.
That would have been a tough loss.
I agree. But it's, I mean, one, like, really fierce-looking woman as the villain is enough. We don't need to lose them all to fascism.
True. But this episode, I mean, skipping ahead a little bit, but the Kuvira and Sue fight was really cool. And I know amazing. I've recently been like, the vending's not that great lately, but the fight between them was really, really good and kinetic.
It was really beautiful. I always love when it's like earthbenders versus earthbenders. I think that's the most fun to see happen. And I liked that it almost feels like a cheeky little reference to the movie, the M. Night Shyamalan movie, whenever like two earthbenders like help each other, but it's like actually cool in the show.
It felt like really similar to me to the Sue and do you know the Nikki Blonsky cameo about the Piskeys?
No, what?
She's like, this is for all the Piskeys. Do you like piss? but just like, you know, Sue, I feel like Sue was really trying a similar tactic with this one. Mm-hmm. But Kuvira, you know, just knew a little more.
Yeah, outfox the fox.
Didn't need to look with her third eye. Her first two are doing just fine.
Mm-hmm. That's right. yeah, I love, like you said, the fight scene, so good. We love like a metal vest moment, always looks good. Also just like the spinning. I love how the spinning like objects look in this show, like the spinning metal plate. Very cool.
Agreed. And you know, Bolin was helping.
He caught the sexy twin who was like clearly down and ready in that moment.
The twins threw me off. I forgot they were there. And it was like, I thought it was Bolin, and then I was like, oh right, it's the twins.
Other sexy earthbender men. Yeah, it was cute to like reacquaint ourselves with the fam. I like that the dad is like wimpy. And that's like perfect for Suyin. Like, of course, she has this like wimpy little man as her man.
It's just like Kuvira.
Yeah, straight up. He is Batar Jr. to the end. He's attracted to a powerful, I mean, mommy issues. Am I right?
So true. Okay. Do we think that this earthbender prison would work?
No, because they could just yank rock from the wall.
Right. They're surrounded by rocks.
It's like, I understand they need to. It's just like, it makes more sense if they were in. We established that like platinum is like kind of like anti-earthbender stuff. It's just like, since when is like a few yards too far for someone to earthbend? I don't know.
I think that if they were in an enclosed wooden prison and they didn't know they didn't know there was so much earth out there, like I would believe that a lot more. And then that can kind of like lead into when Toph's done rescuing them, she can be like, you have to be able to feel it even if you can't see it, like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I just like, it just didn't make any sense to me that they were, just because they were suspended in the air in this wooden box, that they couldn't do it. They needed to be a little more.
Yeah, honestly, it would have been way cooler if they'd done sort of a throwback to book one of Avatar, if they were like out on the sea on like a wooden boat.
Because that's like, where I almost didn't pull Plea's name. I do not remember what the Red Lotus.
Yeah, that guy.
Name is. He was out in the middle of the ocean too, I think.
Maybe they didn't want to go back to that sort of visual again, but like maybe put them in like the middle of a lake and just like have them floating there. I don't know. I agree. It was like a bit, I mean, the cage was suspended and so was my disbelief. Period. But it was cute. And they got them out very quickly. What else? I'm trying to remember. Because they go straight from that to the canon drama of, like, Julie being found out. And they were going to, like, evaporate her, which is horrifying.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of other things happening in this episode. Like, we're getting a little more of the, like, Beifong family drama. No one's really... I mean, we talk a little bit about Lin's issues and being sad she grew up without a dad. That was, like, the primary...
Yeah. Which feels a little... I mean, I get it. But it's, like, I'm thinking back to the acupuncture episode with Lin, which was so amazing. It's still one of my favorites. But that was much more about, like, her drama with her sister.
Yeah.
And so well, it's, like, where did this come from? It feels like I don't think we ever knew she cared about this. But it's, like, I guess I get it.
I just think that since the dad... I just feel like... pinning it all on the issues with not growing up with a dad. I wish it was more about their relationship specifically rather than what Lin didn't have because of who Toph was, I guess, or they could have like gone a little deeper on it. Wanted more just between them, I guess.
Yeah, to me it would have been more interesting if it was like Toph is like maybe assuming that Lin is holding this against her for like not growing up with the dad and Lin being like, no, you just were a bad mom. Like,
right,
that would have made a lot more sense to me. And yeah. It was like, yeah, because then we can get the, like, answer the question of the fans of, like, who is Lin's dad, get that out of the way, and then segue into, yeah, like, Lin's issues with Toph.
That would or the cool. opposite, where Toph is like, I'm an amazing mom. Like, I grew, like, yeah. I raised you all by myself. Like, I didn't need any help or whatever. And then Lin being more like, you don't know anything about me. Like, you don't understand. Like, I always wanted this, like, blah, blah, blah relationship. Rather, I don't know. And rather than, I don't know. Toph just, like, didn't have any.
Shocker. Toph was not introspecting, which is fair.
Any ground. But, yeah, I like that they both made up with Sue. And it seems like Toph and Sue made up a long time ago because Opal had met Toph before, whereas Lin and Toph hadn't seen each other in, like, 2 decades.
Yeah, which I mean, that also feels correct. I feel like Sue would like seek that out with Toph and try to create that bond again, whereas Lin would not. I like that character little moment. It makes a lot of sense to me. I just feel like this whole family is like the show's writing at its strongest, I would say, where like this they really nailed is these relationships here. I wish it had been translated more to our main characters. I feel like Boleyn being here and like fawning over Toph like really created that sort of but made it like very clear the difference we have here of like our old Team Avatar and our new one. It's like Boleyn should be cool enough to like inspire, like, I don't know. I just am like, yeah, I don't think anyone in the future is gonna be like, oh my god, it's Boleyn.
Yes. I mean, yeah, it's funny because the first couple seasons, like, I think they made the right call of, like, sort of sidelining the original group for the most part. Like, it was, they had the flashbacks in season one or whatever, but none of the, like, former leads were on screen in a major way almost at all. And then, like, this episode, it completely hinges on Toph's relationships with their daughters, and one of our supposed main characters is the like just the comedic relief of the episode.
Right. It's like, I don't know what the solution here is though. Which is because it's like, I feel like we always are like, oh my gosh, this relationship works so well. But I think it does come from the fact that like they were so reticent to build off of the character work from the original. They like got maybe more caught up in like the cameo of it all, like, oh my gosh, it's Aang, and not like, oh, let's like really explore, okay, so like what is Aang's legacy to his children. And they I feel like when they started doing that instead of just like showing us Aang, it's when we were got on more on board with it. It feels less like pandering when you actually integrate it into like the emotional stakes of the show instead of just being like, and here's Aang, if that makes sense.
Yes, and I also think that I think that Boleyn being here is like just causing a dramatic recognition of the like some of the issues. Like, yeah. I think that if I was in a better place with Bolin's character and like where his character has been, and I like if he had had scenes like this at all in the past three seasons, I think that I would it would be less jarring. That's not, like all of this stuff is like really good or like for the most part well done. And but like Team Avatar has never had anything like this like at all, so it's just weird.
It is. It's like. You can tell that they are thinking about like the they're even thinking about this stuff of like comparing their writing in the original versus the writing in Korra and kind of trying to rectify that a little, but it came across really clunky here, which we alluded to before when at the end of the episode Toph is like, and this is why Katara didn't get involved with the Civil War business, which was like I hate,
which like isn't even true, she was like healing people.
Yeah, it just felt like hand-wavy in the most, like the, in the truest sense of the word of hand-waving, of, like, the to answer all of your questions at home, this is why. It's like, well, first of all, how does she even know that happened? Because she had no idea who Bolin was, so clearly she's not, like, seeing everything going on. And it's like, okay, so
plus how does she... can't be vines all the way down into the South and North Pole.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't really get it. It's weird.
And I did, I mean, you talked about, like, the hand-wavy, like, whatever lines where Toph has just been like, I've been watching everything. And Bolin's like, that makes complete sense. And then
yeah, they're just like, okay, I guess that's the explanation that the show is giving us.
What was I about to mention? Oh, and then I feel like the Korra plotline in this episode is so funny that it's a B plotline, because like it, I feel like it has the weight if they had given it more scenes, and like it could have been in a whole episode of the show where like Korra is talking to the spirits and she's not understanding why they're like not giving her what she wants, and then like coming to the realization that she's trying to do quote unquote the same thing that Kuvira is doing, even though as we discussed it is a little bit different, but it makes sense. Like they don't want to take place in human wars. I totally get that. And I think the concept is really strong. I wish we had seen more of it.
I agree. This feels like kind of what, I mean, book three is like incredible in like it's so many ways, but it kind of feels like what you would have expected book three to be about, which is more so like, how do spirits like actually integrate into society? What does that mean? We got a little bit of it for sure. But then it ended up being more about the Red Lotus stuff, which was amazing and compelling. It almost feels like we should have like switched these around a little. Which, I mean, obviously like the power vacuum of the Earth Kingdom when it makes sense. But it almost feels like, I don't know, like we should have been addressing all the spirity stuff last season. And then maybe in book four, the stakes get to a point where like the spirits like yes are willing to help out because Korra created that bridge for them and like made everyone feel like we're all in this together. I don't know.
I agree with everything my sister has said. I
shoulda coulda woulda.
at a certain point we just don't recap the episodes and we just talk about all of our other ideas.
I know, like
pretty much every episode.
Let's get them in here. Let's talk it through, folks. But yes, otherwise, great episode.
Yeah, it's funny. We're like, I had fun, but think about everything they could have done better from season one on.
I know. I kind of feel like we're almost, what's that? Trying to think of a good comparison. We're almost like the opposite of like in Drag Race All Winners when they like only had nice things to say to everyone when they clearly had like critiques that they wanted to say. We're like the opposite. We're critiquing a lot, but it's like at this point in the competition, we're splitting hairs, as Michelle Visage, I feel like, says every season.
Well, the issue is that with All Winners, the baseline was that these girls were all fierce boots, and we all knew already that, wait, this is, the baseline is everybody knows they're good, and so we want to talk about how they're good, and then Korra, I feel like most people are like, it's bad, but okay, I just like, after this rewatch, I feel like I'm armed with conversation and talking points about to argue against people who anybody who would dare say that this show is better than Avatar. I used to, like, prior to this rewatch, be like, oh yeah, like that's fine, like I totally get it, like season 3 and 4 were good, like that's a totally reasonable point of view for someone to have, but it just isn't. They cannot be compared. The hit to miss ratio on this show is so fucked up, and Avatar does not have a bad episode. Like I don't know.
I know, it's like, I guess I feel like maybe the only argument there is just that, like, you watched Korra first, honestly, and you liked it more, which is fair. I get that. I don't hold that against people. Maybe there is stuff in Korra that you think is amazing, and there's stuff in Avatar that maybe we don't think is that bad. You think is, like, worth dinging it a lot more. That's totally fair and valid. And we support and love you.
Yeah.
But we don't understand you.
And then people will be like, but I love Korra. And it's like, me too. I love Korra, the character. But
it's very, like, I love Sakura. I wish Sakura were better written.
Yes.
Like, that's fine.
Alas. And this is the kind of conversation we had. I mean, I don't want to revisit my mental state when we were doing Books 1 and 2. But it's, like, it's so funny. Like, this is the conversation. We talked about how the show is bad even on episodes we enjoyed.
Yeah. Oopsie. Sorry.
Are we good? It's funny. I was just thinking a couple of days ago about during Survivor 43. Sorry to invoke, but how most of the conversation was around whether or not the season was good.
Very.
They're doing the Korra podcast feels like that sometimes.
I know. It's the YouTube screen cap of the, like, preteen boys sitting around where it's like, is Fortnite actually good? That's us.
Yeah. And then at the end of the episode, Toph goes back. Like, I don't understand why they're, like, doing. I mean, I obviously it's so that she can come in at the end to, like, rescue them, but like they're going back to rescue Julie, who's gonna get blown up in the city, and Bolin leaves, and then Opal leaves, and then Sue and Lin are like, okay, this could be our chance to kill Kuvira, and they all go, and Toph's like, oh well, I'm just gonna stay here, I don't want to get kidnapped or whatever, and it's like, that I just feel like that totally, it's just, it doesn't, I get that they have to move her around, because obviously everyone knows Toph could do whatever she wants whenever she wants, and like Toph could have just gone and killed Kuvira, I'm certain, but it's like, it doesn't make sense to me for Toph's character.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I guess the line that to me justified it a little, and to me, I really like this beat of when Toph was like, don't tell Korra, but my back is tired.
Mm.
To me, is her kind of admitting that she doesn't think she could actually take Kuvira. And I don't think her pride would have allowed her to, like, even try if she didn't think she could win. That, to me, is, I guess, a justification that I can get behind. But it's like, I think the true justification on, like, behind the scenes was that they just didn't want to show Toph, like, lose to Kuvira, because it just would not ring true to us as the audience, and like she can't just, they like introduce a character who could like solve all the problems of the show, but they like obviously can't let that happen, which is like not great to have that like a problem solving like character in the show. They just have to like justify why she doesn't just solve the problem for them.
Yes, but like they had that big spirit laser. It could have been like Toph is there, but they have a gigantic whatever. And then at the end, Toph is like, and I'm not like, Toph can go and help, like, be wise advice, whatever, who cares? And then she's like, well, I'm just gonna go back to my swamp, I guess.
Bye, have fun. Yeah, it's like weird. No one even is like, so do you want to like help us defend Republic City? Because it's clearly about to be under threat of laser. She's like, no, I'm good, actually. Yeah, leave it to the kids, as she says, which is like, Yeah, I don't know. Feels too much of like a meta, like trying to justify why these characters are in the world, but like not doing anything.
Yeah, they.
It's yeah.
I mean, it almost feels like. I mean, they should all just be like infirm or dead, I guess. if they have to like jump through all these hoops, because we just saw Tofty's all this earthbending all episode, and now she's like, I can't.
Yeah, she literally like incapacitates an entire army in a moment, but then she's like done. I don't know.
But good episode.
Yeah, but good episode. Yeah, it's just like the problems we have with it are more so problems with the show at large.
Yeah, I know. It's just hard to talk about because we just have so many ongoing problems with like what the show has set up for itself. So those issues are still present in every episode.
They didn't fix it this week. So you gotta talk about it.
The premise has remained the same, and so there's a problem.
We have to address it. I mean, I feel like we talk that way about Survivor 2. It's like, yes, yeah, there are still women getting voted off. So that's something we have to talk about.
I know. And then I've at least in Survivor, I feel like I've trained myself to like at least maneuver around conversations so that it's not all like we hate these advantages. But like,
yeah.
With Gora, I'm not. We just get a flash in the pan every time where it's like bad. But oh well.
Oh well, Opal. wish she had more to do this episode too, but I don't know. And my girl, she's down bad for Balin. And his brown shirt. I don't like his ensemble. I miss.
Balin did not even do enough in this episode to win her back. And then that was the only reason he was even there. Like, wouldn't this have been better if it was just the Beifongs?
Yeah,
but Balin had to be there to be comedy and then also get back with Opal, but it's like
we didn't need that. Like, it's very yeah. I mean,
if he had just had like the information, and where I don't want to get back into rewriting everything. Yeah. It's fine. Beautiful.
We just don't like that.
Any final thoughts?
Yeah. All we've said. Agreed. Final thought is that Balin, the fashion choices are interesting now. I miss the uniform. I'll say that.
Yeah, the fashion choices are strange now.
Like, yeah. but that's my only thought. Really, really fun episode. Like the animation, like the bending, juicy groan.
Juicy groans.
What about you? Anything else?
You know, three episodes left. Kuvira is attacking in 2 weeks. Obviously, the two-part finale.
You said then the same intonation as Nicki Minaj. Pink Friday. This is in stores.
Legend of Korra Book 4 finale is in stores tomorrow. Yeah. Give it up for Legend of Korra Book 4 finale, everybody.
Can you believe it? You were so ready to quit in book 2 and also in this book a few weeks ago.
I didn't want to do this in the first place. At the end of Avatar, you were like, we're going to do Korra, right? And I was like, are we?
Oh, I don't remember coercing. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, you should be, but we did it.
We did it against your will.
I would have always wondered, and now I never have to wonder what my thoughts would have been.
Then they remained the same, if not lowered from your original thoughts.
And just like that.
And just so speaking of lowered standards
of a sequel series.
Zoinks. Ready for that show to be done.
I really think that Charlotte would do amazing in the world of Avatar.
Me too. She's the only one with any sort of character development in her own show. So yeah. She should be great here.
Say that.
and just like say that.
And Dr. Naya, we would obviously love to have you since your show would hate to have you.
Yeah, and clearly Denever wants to show you in any sort of scenario that doesn't involve your kitchen.
Indeed. Derek, where can the people find you?
Follow me, Erin Derek's on Twitter. Follow Shadow Play Gaze, me and Christine. Obviously Christine's been very busy with Stanima, so I feel like the Uchida musical will have to be pushed a little. Also still waiting on special guest stuff, but just still follow us because we're fun. Follow us at Bitter Jurors Pod on Twitter and Instagram.
Me, Sam Stanish, everywhere. Me, do Buffy boyfriends with my boyfriend, who just had his birthday. I posted on our Instagram story, the Bitter Jurors story. We did a birthday survivor game for him, and he did float to the end as a birthday boy who knew everybody and invited everyone to the event, but then got second place due to a topaz Gary glitter situation. it's harrowing. I hope that that relationship can survive.
And yes, we will do an entire recap podcast of birthday survivor.
Don't worry, I recorded exit interviews with everybody, which we'll play starting right now.
No. Yes. yes, that sounds so fun. Yes, be excited, people. Once Cora's done, we will be talking Survivor with our good friend Christine Palin. Go listen to Sandwall, like we said. Omer was on recently. Love that for Christine. But like, also, so many other amazing guests have been on, so go listen to that. Our good friend Gia Worthy has started her podcast / Survivor. Go listen to that too, because I feel like, did we talk about that on air? We definitely talked about her with her about that at some point.
Yes, we've been talking about it with her. I really hope to be on very soon.
Yes,
I want
to
be.
But go listen to that too, because I love that that is out in the world too.
Indeed. Okay. Well, we're only a month away from Survivor, so that's exciting.
Yes, and we'll do a cast assessment for that. So, yay, Cora. She's on her way out. Bye.
Bye.